Hi, I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lin.
And we're Book Friends Forever.
We're childhood friends that grew up to be
a children's book editor
and an author and illustrator.
Welcome to Book Friends Forever, the resetting for 2021 with the Lunar New Year episode. Every week we catch up with each other's lives, talk about what's on our minds, and share with each other what we're grateful for.
And check out our website, bookfriendsforever.com. The website will include more detailed show notes as well as links to the episodes.
And please, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy our podcast, please tell a friend about it. And also, please consider joining our Patreon. We would love your support to keep this podcast going.
Yes, and we'd like to thank our new patrons, Ann Winter,
Annie Pants,
Erica Jackson Kirkendall.
Hi, Erica. I know Erica. Meredith Labodi.
And Jessica, who doesn't have a last name.
And apologies if we pronounced your name wrong.
Yes.
So thank you so much, everyone. As a reminder, we're asking for just $1 an episode, and you'll get a special notebook with art by Grace featuring a quote by my mother. If it is to be, it is up to me.
Yes, and only while supplies last. You can join at patreon.com/bookfriendsforever1. It's the numeral one. The link is in the show notes and our webpage. Anyway, Alvina, how have you been?
I have been great. I don't know. I just thought I'd say that. I am great because it's snowing. It's this huge blizzard. I think we're supposed to get up to 2 feet of snow here in New York. We're definitely over a foot already. It's just been piling up. So I now work in our office in my home office, I should say. And there's a sliding glass door to our back patio. And it's just the snow has been really piling up high against the window. So that's kind of cool to see. And I love snow. So, you know, this morning I went out in the snow and kind of, you know, went for a walk in the park. And I saw someone skiing and I saw all of these dogs frolicking. And, you know, I don't know. I think snow is just joyful and fun. So
it is so beautiful. Like, it's snowing here too. And it's been like so white outside my window all day. And for a snack, I stopped and I ate an orange, right? Mm-hmm. And I was looking at the window and I was eating this orange and looking at the window. I was like, you know, this is a really magical thing. Here I am eating this sweet orange, you know, looking out the window at this like winter wonderland. It just, the juxtaposition of the two things just made me realize we That's are nice. Still in pretty magical times.
We are. But other than that, I've been pretty busy. So this past weekend was Kindling Words, which we, of course, did virtually this year, which was a very different experience. But I actually think it was really, really great. I did not participate as fully as I would, I think, when I'm there in person. And part of it is just, you know, I'm on the computer all day, as I'm sure our listeners can relate to. So I participated in the editor strand, which was about 2 hours every morning, and then I went to the evening events, but I didn't really stay for any of the after, you know, socializing. So I feel bad about that. I did want to give a shout out to Maya, who listens to this podcast and had messaged me saying that she registered for Kindling Words because she heard us talk about it on this podcast.
Aww.
So I hope you had a great experience and that you can come back when we're all in person in the future.
What were the biggest differences between in person and online? Like, did they have pretty much the same programs? I know when I was there so many years ago, the big thing was like white space. Did they do that kind of thing?
They did do white space, which I did not participate in. So, you know, I think the authors and illustrators got a lot out of the white space. So they called it spark space. And so people could say like, oh, I want to have a little nonfiction discussion at this time. And I want to do this. They also had diversity training during the spark space, which was a new thing for this year, which I think is really great. I think the other big difference is instead of having a separate author strand, illustrator strand that where a speaker spoke every day, they just had Friday night where they had 3 keynote speakers. Mm. And I think they just realized it would just be too hard to coordinate and manage and do all of that remotely. So mm-hmm. I think they made really smart changes. you know, and I, but I think that the main thing I think that's lost is there's so much connection that happens at the mealtime, you know, or mm-hmm. just when you're kind of hanging out waiting for the speaker to start, or, you know, in the suite after party, you know, where you just kind of are talking about, you know, the day and what you learned that day. So, you know, I think that I think some people still had that because they did have a Slack channel and, you know, different kind of Zoom rooms that you could go into. And I know there was a Zoom dance party, which maybe in hindsight, I should have done that because I do. I love dancing and that would have been fun. But I was just so exhausted that I couldn't do that. But it was really great. But I look forward to being in person again. And then I also did DVCon, which is the first ever conference that was put on as an offshoot for DV Pit, that Twitter pitch event that agent Beth Phelan had created. And it was really wonderfully organized. So that happened on Saturday and Sunday, and I did a panel on voice on Saturday evening, so in between my Kindling Words events. And, you know, there are about 500 people who were watching live, and then there are more people on this. They use Discord instead of Slack. So just a lot of technology, a lot of, you know, just children's book industry. Well, the DVCon was not just children's books. It was also adult books. But, yeah, it was great.
I think it's cool, but I think the thing that is missing when you tell me that schedule, like, the thing about going to Kindling Words is like it really is a retreat, right? So right. you like get it and you get away from everything. But here now with it being online, it's like, oh, and then I like did this other event in between, like all these. And not that you shouldn't do those things, but that's true. That.
I mean, normally what I love about Kindling Words is like you travel and then I pretty much unplug from work. Mm-hmm. But it's been so busy at work that I really just had to take advantage of the fact that we were doing this remotely. And, you know, I would go to the editor strand in the morning and then I would work regular days, Thursday and Friday. And so that's definitely different from, you know, how it has been in the past. And yeah, definitely, I wouldn't have been able to participate in multiple panels and conferences, which, you know, I'm glad I was able to participate in DVCon because I did want to support that conference. But definitely, I think I did not get as much out of either conference mm-hmm. or retreat by doing both. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's exhausting. But yeah. I am glad I did it. I just, you know, it's not ideal for sure.
Yeah. But these times, you got to make do.
These times. How about you? How have you been?
I think... Okay, I think the political world and everything like that's kind of calming down to a more normal pitch where like it's not on the forefront of my mind anymore. Like all of a sudden, I've realized I've been neglecting like work and other things, and now that's coming to the forefront. Like, oh, I really have to get this book done. I have to really do this, and that's been kind of. A little stressful. I've been having these stress dreams. It's always the same thing where it's like, I'm going to take a big final exam, but I didn't go to any of the classes or I didn't study anything. And I have a big exam tomorrow and I got to read and study and know the whole book, like a big encyclopedia book by tomorrow morning. And so like I had like a dream like that again.
I definitely have similar dreams. Actually, last night I dreamt that I was trying to get from one event to the next. And then in between, I was, you know, taking the elevator up and I accidentally got off at the wrong floor. And then I accidentally, like, put a remote control in my purse, you know, and then I was on the ground floor and I realized I had to go back and return it. And then I had to take the elevator up again. And then so it was one of those anxiety dreams, I guess.
So yours, so that means probably more yours is like connection problems,
right?
Whereas I think mine is just the idea that I'm not prepared.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Different kinds of anxiety.
So I've been like trying to, and I think a lot of it is I'm kind of getting stressed out about money, and I know I have to do my taxes, right? And like before that whole phishing thing happened, I was like starting to make those steps, and then the phishing thing happened and I'm kind of in shell shock and I don't want to go back and look at things. But I know I have to. I'm just trying to get up the nerve to face my finances, and so And one of the things that I did was I applied for the second round of PPP, which is the Payroll Protection Plan. It's a government program where you can get a loan if you've had losses from COVID. Mm-hmm. And I applied the first time and I got some. And so I applied the second time. And for the second time, they wanted to know what your loss is compared to last year. So I just crunched the numbers for quarter three. And I found I had a 73% loss compared to last year. Wow. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm kind of surprised we're still here. I'm very, very grateful for savings. And, you know, hey, I qualified for the PPP. So I guess that's good.
Okay. Silver linings. Right. Well, this episode is called Resetting for 2021 with the Lunar New Year. So I think we can all reset. I think that although there are some things I think that make us feel better about 2021, it's all still stressful. Grace, you posted about this recently, I think on Twitter and Facebook, about the year of Gongzi and what it means. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Did I talk about this on the podcast before? Anyway.
I don't think so.
So, okay. So 2020 was the year of the rat, but it was also the year of Gongzi, which is the year of calamities in Chinese culture. So every 60 years, so the Chinese zodiac is a 12 animal year cycle. After all 12 animals complete their cycle five times, it's supposed to be the year of Gongzi. It's a time where drastic changes happens and it's always really, really difficult to get through, which I would say is pretty apt for how things happen for 2020. Mm-hmm. But the year of Gongzi is almost over. It's on February 12th, 2021. It's the year of the rat, and the year of Gongzi will be over, and it will be the year of the ox. Yay!
Yay! My cat is happy too.
Do you want to know what's going to happen to us in the year of the ox?
I do.
Okay. So the ox is supposed to be very hardworking and strong and dependable. So if you were born in the year of the ox, you're supposed to be, you know, determined and diligent. And you get your goals done when you work at it a little bit at a time. But since it's the year of the ox, what it means for everyone, it means that this is a year that patience and hard work is rewarded. It's a year that asks all of us to be very strong and persistent. But if we are strong and persistent, that means that the year should be very stable and balanced. So I don't know, stability sounds pretty good to me.
That sounds good. So we're both tigers, right? Mm-hmm. What is, I remember when I was growing up, the main thing I knew about being a female tiger was that we were unlucky at guests at weddings. I don't know if you'd ever heard that. Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be unlucky to have a tiger woman in the house, but that's just because old-fashioned patriarchy where they didn't want strong women. They wanted docile women.
Yeah, it's funny. We were Zooming with my family last week, and my niece Shoshana asked Stephen what his animal was, and which was a really cute question. So he, you know, he knows that he's a dog, because when we first started dating, of course, I don't know if you all do this, but when I start dating someone new, even though I don't fully believe in horoscopes and astrology, I still look it up.
It's just fun.
It's fun. So I looked up, you know, both the, you know, Western astrology, but I also looked up, you know, Eastern, and I looked up tigers and dogs, and tiger compatibility with dog is considered one of the best in the Chinese horoscope.
Yay!
Yeah, so there was one website that said, these people get along well with each other. The brave, strong-willed, generous tigers respect the faithful, kind, and honest dogs. Hmm. So that made me feel good. But
I'm not sure what Alex is. I think he's a pig. Mm-hmm. And no, I think I remember looking up that he's like a homebody. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be very romantic, which I, well, you know, which he may or may
he
not
can be.
He can be, yes. I think he's romantic in his own way.
Yeah. So I know there's also this legend that surrounds the Lunar New Year that involves the Nian monster. And I know, so we usually say Xin Nian Kuai Le, which means literally New Year happy, or Xin Nian Hao, which means literally New Year good. But I think some people also can use the phrase Guo Nian Hao, which I guess means like you pass the year. So it's kind of congratulating you on surviving the previous year. But do you want to tell the story of the Nian monster?
So this is the story of the Nian monster. It was said an evil Nian monster woke up only on Lunar New Year, and on that day it would destroy homes and villages. However, people found out that the Nian was afraid of the color red, bright light, and loud noises. So they began to hang bright red banners around their doors and windows, light firecrackers, and have lions dance and roar to keep that Nian monster away. Also, because the people were afraid that it might be their very last day on Earth, they ate their favorite foods, they wore their very best clothes, and they forgave arguments and made up with enemies. So the Lunar New Year was originally about, you know, closing up all the loose ends and basically trying to survive.
That's great. Well, that, you know, I never, I guess, I mean, I think I've heard that story before, but I've never really absorbed it. But now, of course, it makes sense of why we celebrate, like, with firecrackers and wearing red. And, mm-hmm. and I never really fully understood that.
And why we hang, like, red banners outside our doors and windows, because we wanted to keep that Nian monster out, you know? And, like, the lions dancing to scare the Nian monster away. So mm-hmm. all those things.
So how are you planning to celebrate this year's Lunar New Year?
So we kind of make a big deal out of Lunar New Year, I think, because to me it's kind of going to be one of the few things that will probably tie Hazel to our Asian heritage, because, you know, I don't have a good command of language, so I can't pass that on to her. But I do know stories, mm-hmm. and I do enjoy food, so... So we are going to, we've made dumplings, both meat dumplings and the sweet dumplings. The sweet dumplings you have at the Lantern Festival. So we made dumplings, we're going to eat dumplings, we're going to order out other food that I'm not good at cooking. Mm-hmm. And then we hung up decorations. So, like, I designed this really easy paper cutout of an ox that that she cut out to hang on our window. And I put it on my Lunar New Year newsletter, and then I'm like, oh, well, maybe I should give this to her whole class. So I'm going to do a Lunar New Year presentation to her class, and we'll do the paper craft with them. So I'm like, multiple use for this paper cut craft.
That's great.
And then, then Lunar New Year, we're going to have dinner with my parents via Zoom. So, and we're hopefully all going to have long life noodles, hopefully all together.
That's so nice.
How are you going to celebrate?
You know, I don't actually usually do much for Lunar New Year. I think that, you know, I'll try to just eat Chinese food. and I do try to wear red if I remember on that day. But I was thinking, like, maybe we will commemorate a little bit more and either order or make noodles, because, you know, you're supposed to eat... Yeah, long life noodles to symbolize having a long life. And also dumplings is for fortune, because they kind of look like coins, I guess.
Yes, ingots.
So I'll try to eat, you know, that'll be really tough, but, you know, I'll try to eat noodles and dumplings. So the New Year, you know, we always talk about how the New Year is a time for us to reset. And we've already talked about some of our resolutions and goals for this year, but we thought we'd talk a little bit more about how we're planning on keeping our resolutions.
Yes. So I'm really into this book by Gretchen Rubin called The Four Tendencies. I mentioned it a little bit before on this podcast, but I'm so into this book, I even sent it to my older sister as a Christmas present. So The Four Tendencies is about learning what kind of person you are, so that you can fulfill your goals. I guess that's the best way of saying it. So basically, it's how do you deal with expectations, inner expectations and outer expectations? How can you use the way that you deal with these expectations as a method to accomplish your goals. So Gretchen Rubin has divided people into four different tendencies. You are either an obliger, a questioner, an upholder, or a rebel. And each one of these tendencies deal with inner and outer expectations in a different way. And once you know what kind of person you are, you can set yourself up for success using your tendency.
So what kind of person are you?
So I am an obliger. So an obliger is a person who needs outer accountability to get things done.
So for example, if you like want to exercise regularly, you might like have a friend schedule, you know, like a daily walk with a friend, or like go to a class where you know that someone is expecting you to attend.
Yes. So exactly. It's somebody who needs something outside of themselves to motivate them to accomplish their goals.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I took the quiz and I think I am an upholder, which I think means that it's my inner accountability. Like I am able to just keep goals, mm-hmm. I guess. I do think I have some obliger tendencies. I was trying to think like what, because I think she says that everyone has like a main tendency, but also a secondary tendency. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I feel like a lot of women are probably obligers because kind of we're people pleasers in a way and used to doing, I guess, serving other people and doing things for other people.
Yeah.
What I was thinking about, what, you know, like I can set goals and achieve them, but I think it does help me if for example, I speak my goals out loud on this podcast and then know that I'm somewhat accountable, you know, to keeping them. So
the upholder is somebody who can keep inner and outer expectations pretty well. They're pretty well motivated. So usually when they say, I want to get this done, they just do it. So they're the ones that are pretty, like, they kind of like things to be very structured. They like rules. They like things to be, they like to have a plan to follow. So that's an upholder.
Mm-hmm. It's more self-motivated.
Yeah. And an obliger is somebody who needs outer accountability. They need people or something. It doesn't even have to be a person, but they need to have something on the outside to kind of motivate them to follow through on things. So like you said, like taking a class, that is enough to motivate them to actually do it. But if they said, I just want to start exercising, they would never do it unless they were to sign up for a class or something like that. Mm-hmm. Then after that, there's the rebel. The rebel is the one that will not do anything. they hate rules. They hate expectations. They feel like any kind of expectations, inner or outer, kind of pens them in and makes them feel like makes them feel trapped. So even when they want to do things, they have a hard time doing it because it makes them feel trapped. They crave this idea of freedom being all the choices. You know, like they don't want to make a choice because they want all the choices. Whereas the upholder is somebody who finds freedom in limiting their choices and usually just having no choice at all. Like, I know for you, you often talk about how you do a no candy mm-hmm. restriction. So because you find that it's easier just to say no candy at all than right. It is to like have, I'll just have one piece of candy a week. So, and having no candy at all is just easier for you. And it's freeing for you just to know that it's a strict
right.
no.
Because I don't have to think about it.
Yes. So that's why you're definitely an upholder. Like your freedom is the fact that you have a strict decision.
Mm-hmm. And how about the questioner?
The questioner is somebody who will only do things if it feels right to them. Like it's a very personal thing and they have to feel completely fine with it. They tend to do a lot of research and they can get lost in research, and they only trust their own gut or their own decision making. So questioners are sometimes frustrating to like doctors, because they won't believe their doctor and they'll believe like what they read on the internet instead, you know, like because that's what they believe, you know. So so that's what a questioner is.
So a questioner does a lot of research, asks a lot of questions. So but how if someone knows that they're a questioner, how would they, I guess, what tools and skill, like what tools would they use to motivate themselves?
So a questioner, I think their biggest problem is they can get lost in research. And questioners, I think they tend to be perfectionists. So there's a lot of things that you do to let go of that perfection. You tell yourself, okay, I will only research for 20 minutes, and whatever is the best after 20 minutes, that's what I take, you know, instead
right.
of...
So time, putting like a time limit on things.
Yes. Or one thing that Gretchen Rubin often says is like, you go in and you're going to go buy like, I'm going to go in and buy a scarf. And a questioner will go in and look at the scarf and be like, oh, maybe this scarf. And then like, no, I think if I go to that store over there, I'll be better. And then they'll spend the whole day going to different stores trying to find the best scarf. And she's like, the best thing for a questioner to do is to think about it. It's like, is the quality of this scarf going to make a difference in a year, in a month? You know, like to make sure you prioritize what needs to be researched and questioned and realized. And so then you're like, okay, I just need a scarf. It's not a priority item. I will buy the best scarf I see in the store and that's it, kind of thing.
Right. That makes sense. How about a rebel? How would you motivate a rebel?
So a rebel is somebody who is very difficult to motivate.
I know. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, must be hard.
Like the best thing that a rebel can do to motivate is instead of taking the expectation as their motivator, they have to take their identity as a motivator. So like say you want a rebel to wear a mask, right? And the rebel's like, I'm not wearing a mask. You could say, you have to wear a mask. It's the law, right? And that would work for an upholder. An upholder's like, yes, it's the law. I will wear the mask, you know? Or to an obliger, you would say, could you wear this mask for me? And they'll be like, oh, yes, I'll wear this mask for you, you know? Mm-hmm. And then to a questioner, you say, if you wear this mask, it says that it will, you know, it's 97% effective. If we're both wearing masks, and it'll bring down the COVID rates of this and this, you know, give them all the facts, and they'll be like, oh, okay. And but if you say that to any of those things to a rebel, they don't care. They're like, yeah, I'm not going to do it because you're telling me to do it. You know, like you're telling me to do it, I'm not going to do it. So the best thing to do for that is to approach the rebel with their identity and be like, are you the kind of person that cares about society? Are you the kind of person that cares about other people? And so when they put it in the context of their identity of like, I'm going to wear this mask because I'm the kind of person that cares about people in society. I'm the kind of person that does these things, you know, that is the most effective for a rebel.
Interesting.
Which is probably why it works in the other way, too. Like, I won't wear a mask because I'm not the kind of person who's going to bow down to the man, you know?
Right, right. Oh, I feel like I need to learn what everyone I work with, what tendency everyone is, so I can help motivate them.
I know. I sent the book to my sister, and she was really excited. She's a professor at a college, and she's like, oh, this really helps. Now I can use, like, she's been using the tendencies to figure out how to best motivate her students. She would give them all these, like, lab problems and just practice lab problems. She'd be like, please practice these will be on your test, but they didn't count for anything. She just said, you know, this is what you need to study. And of course the students wouldn't do them, and then they would bomb the test. And then she says she read the book, and she's like, okay. And the next time she gave the lab problems, she's like, okay, these lab problems are homework, and they are due next week. And they are worth, like, she said she made it for like really piddling points, like 5 points, you know, but like everybody did them and they did much, much better on the test. So she was like trying to figure out like all these different ways of how to motivate the students to do better.
Cool. So are you changing anything now that you know about your tendency? Are you changing how you're setting out to, I guess, achieve your New Year's resolutions?
Well, I had read the books before, so that's why I had set up the resolutions as I had, like, especially the writing resolution, where, like, I really want to write this novel, and I'm realizing that I have to have some accountability. So that's why every day I write for 10 minutes, and I can write longer than 10 minutes. And actually, I do find that I do end up writing longer than 10 minutes many times. But as long as I write at least 10 minutes, and I put a little timer on, and then after I write those 10 minutes, I take one of those sentences that I wrote, and I send it to our friend Libby. And she does the same thing. She writes for at least 10 minutes. And when she's done, she takes one of those sentences and she sends it to me. So every day we send each other one sentence that we've written. And it's worked so well. Like, the accountability is so great, because sometimes she'll send me a sentence and I'll be like, oh, I haven't done my 10 minutes yet. And I'll, like, go and do it. And I'm like, I have to send her my sentence. So that's been really, really great. And I know, like, one of the things that I've been thinking about, I'm not going to do it now because I'm way too behind with my other work. But one thing that I want to do eventually is I want to master drawing on the computer. Like, that's something I haven't been able to master. I don't really find it that much fun, but I think that if I mastered it, I would find it much more fun, you know? So it's kind of like one of those things. Like, so I realize I need to probably learn computer skills for art. And I probably have to create a whole new kind of computer style too. And so I was thinking, maybe this summer, what I'll do is I'll start like a web comic. Cause I did all these, I do all these drawings for Hazel for lunch. And like, they're like these really scrawly marker drawings. Like, they're terrible, but they're funny and she likes them. And I was like, I can take these drawings and I'll redo them on the computer and I'll start a little web comic. And if I start a little web comic that's like weekly, that will make me accountable, you know, so people, like, I'll be like, and this is this week's web comic. So I feel like I need that outer accountability or else I won't ever really do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was, I don't think I fully knew about my tendency before I made my New Year's resolutions, but I guess I don't generally have too much trouble achieving my New Year's resolutions. But I think after learning about the tendencies, I think what I have to be careful about is, I guess, making too many and being too rigid about it. Because I do think, you know, I had talked about counting calories, for example, on previous episodes. And I think I can get a little too, I guess, you know, like beholden to those resolutions. I mean, I do... You know, for example, I have an Apple Watch now, and the Apple Watch, you know, has these rings, and it's like an exercise ring, a move ring, a stand, you know, there's these different things that you achieve. And I think that's probably part of my obliger tendency is, you know, or like the Pavlovian dog. Like, I think just that I just like, I have to close the rings every day. It just, it does motivate me. And like, no one else knows if I close the rings or not, you know, so... Yeah, I think that's why I started making. I'm making fewer resolutions. I used to have really long lists of New Year's resolutions, but I think in recent years I've kind of been cutting down on the number of them and just, you know, just achieving the ones that I feel are most important. So
yeah, I think fewer is easier.
Yes, for sure.
Fortune cookies
for this episode's fortune cookie segment, we are going to share what we're working on. Alvina, what are you working on?
Well, in addition to working on performance reviews, because it's that time of year, I'm editing two young adult novels right now. The first is Mirror Girls by Kelly McWilliams. She's the author of Agnes at the End of the World, which came out last year. And then I'm also editing a new young adult novel by Samira Ahmed. And I won't mention the title for that one yet because it hasn't been announced. But I'm excited about both. How about you? What are you working on?
I am painting the art for our picture book, Once Upon a Book. I think we're going to call it Once Upon a Book. That the story that I co-wrote with Kate Messner. And it's going super, super slow, but I think it'll be worth it. I'm really proud of this art. Like, I think it's like my best art ever. And I really love it. It's kind of, it's a really kind of freeing thing when you're doing work that you love, because like I'm like, I love it, I think it's wonderful, and there's a part of me that always says, I wonder if people will like it, and then there's another part that kind of responds like, if they don't like it, who cares?
Right. No, I mean, it's so beautiful. I'm so excited for
it. So yeah, I think it's, I'm really happy with it. I just wish I could do it a little bit faster.
It'll be worth the wait.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yes. Okay. And now we'll end as we always do with what we're grateful for. I'll start this week. And I've been grateful for this before, but I think because I just attended Kindling Words and DVCon, I have to say it again. So I am grateful for the warm, supportive KidLit community. You know, Stephen sat in on a couple of the evening Kindling Words events, and afterwards, you know, I asked him what his impression was, and he said, I guess I've realized how nice and warm and you know, and supportive the KidLit community is. And I said, yes, that is true.
Has he been involved in the adult literature community at all?
Not really, no. I mean, he's just done, you know, poetry, mm-hmm. slam poetry events, and, you know, he's definitely been involved in the poetry world.
I'm curious how it compares.
Yeah, and Broadway, you know, and TV production, and, yeah. You know, so it's very different.
Yes.
How about you? What are you grateful for?
So I'm really grateful that this past Sunday in the Boston Globe, there was this really nice feature article about me and my work in the book section. It was really, really nice.
Yay, yeah, it was so lovely.
Yeah, it was really long.
It was all about you.
And it was all about me, which was a little surprising. Like, what happened was the writer of the article, Victoria, contacted me. And she said that she was thinking about writing this article with children's authors, kind of giving parents and kids advice what to do, like, during this pandemic in the winter, you know. And I said, oh, that sounds great. And we got on Zoom and we started talking. And she just reminded me, like, so much of my cousin. We ended up talking for, like, 2 hours, right? And she was so great and nice. And then later she's like, you know, I talked to my boss and we're going to change the article a little bit and I'm going to make it longer. And I was like, that's great. And she's like, and there's going to be a photographer coming to your house and wants to take photos. And I was like, great. So we took photos. But I still wasn't getting the grasp of what kind of article it was going to be, you know, until I saw it. And then I was like, it was so beautiful. It was such a nice pat on the back of thinking about my career that way. So it was really nice. But the thing that was what I'm really grateful for that is due to that article is, like I said, they took photos of me and Hazel, and those are in the paper, and I love the photo of me and Hazel, but they took this photo of me, like, alone, and the photographer says, you know, look, don't smile for this one, you know, look more serious, and so, like, I'm kind of, like, looking out and looking very, like, pensive and a little moody, like the lighting's like very dramatic, and I did not really like that photo that much. Someone was saying to me on Zoom, oh, great article, and I was like, I didn't like that photo though. It made me look like an old lady. And then Hazel like popped up and said, what's wrong with that? And all of a sudden I was like kind of speechless for a second, and then I started thinking about it, and I was like, yeah, what is wrong with that? You're like, what's wrong with looking old? Like, that's, it's like so ageist, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, there's nothing wrong with looking old, because, you know, because looking, that means we survived, right? Being old means we survived. We survived the Nian. So
yes.
So I kind of am really grateful for that little exchange, because it's made me kind of rethink about the idea of age. It made me remember a saying that I had heard when Robert died, and it was like, don't regret being older, that's not a gift that everyone gets.
Mm-hmm.
And
so true.
And so it just made me appreciate looking old. And being old is actually something to cherish, not
yes.
something to disparage.
Here's to growing old. And that was our Resetting for 2021 with the Lunar New Year episode. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to Hachette Audio, Little Brown Books for Young Readers, and Alex at PC Work Studio for producing and editing this podcast. You can find me at Planet Alvina on Twitter and at Alvina Ling on Instagram.
And I'm at Pacey Lynn on both platforms. We love hearing feedback, so keep tagging and messaging us on social media using the hashtag BookFriendsForever, or send us a message via our website, BookFriendsForever.com. You can also see more detailed show notes there.
And if you have any suggestions for future topics to cover, please let us know. And of course, please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it.
And don't forget to join our Patreon. We'd really, really appreciate it. The link is in the show notes.
I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
Have a great week.
And happy reading.
Bye. Bye.